Come on, you know, hopeless, you jokers and rogues. We're on the road to nowhere, let's find out where it goes. It might be.
Hello, and welcome to Sounds of the Sea, a podcast about and for sea phages, not viruses of the ocean, but phage hunting and genomic analyses. This is episode 1, recorded on May 23rd, 2014. I'm Graham Hatful, and I'm joined in the studio here today by, to my left, Welkin Pope. Hi, Welkin.
Hi, Graham.
Charlie Bowman.
Hi, Graham.
Dan Russell.
Hey, everybody.
And Debbie Jacob-Sarah.
Hi.
So Debbie, Dan, Charlie, Welkin, and myself are all involved in the Sea Phages program. And this program is aimed at discussing all topics in phage discovery and genomics that we hope will be of interest to students and faculty of the Sea Phages program and beyond. Now, I'm told that Dan and Charlie have a special segment for this first episode of Sounds of the Sea.
That's right. And that's all you've been told. So you'll have to see what we do.
Indeed.
Well, I think anyone who's participated in phage hunting, which includes all of us here at this table, knows that one of the coolest and most exciting parts is when you find a new phage, you get to name it. And, you know, naming phages is a real hook for students that get involved in the Sea Phages program because they get some real sense of project ownership. And it used to be that the only data we collected about naming was the phage names themselves, which are pretty fascinating in and of themselves. But as of a couple years ago, we also started giving people the opportunity to tell us why they named their phages a certain way. And if you look at these collected naming notes, it is an amazing and fascinating cross-section of what's going on in the minds of freshmen around the country. And so I thought we could have a regular segment where we explore some of these names a little bit. And so I think we should call this regular segment, What's in a Name?
What's in a Name?
Okay. So today on What's in a Name. Yeah, no one was ready for that. Today on What's in a Name, we have the theme is going to be mythical and legendary names. And so Charlie, what's our first phage today?
So our first phage today is Changeling, which was found in 2013 in Pullman, Washington by Delaney O'Malley of Washington State University. It was sequenced this February and is a member of Cluster A2. So, Dan, how did Changeling get its name?
I quote, "A changeling is a mythical creature that is the deformed child of a fairy, which is put into a mortal's household in exchange for their own child. The changeling then causes havoc inside the mortal's household. This reminded me of the way that some phage cause bacteria to become pathogenic once their DNA is incorporated into the bacterial DNA."
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Wild.
Not bad, right? I mean, it sort of has some phage biology in there. All right, Charlie, what's our second phage of our three today?
The second phage is Balder, which was found in 2012 in Birmingham, Alabama, by Brianna Kelly at UAB. So would you like to explain how Balder got its name?
I'll let Brianna Kelly do that, and I'll quote her. She says, "The phage's name is Balder, after the Norse god of ease, happiness, and innocence. Balder was killed by the god Loki, and thus began a time of hardship and the war of the gods. The phage worked very well and was easy until a certain point, then caused stress and heartache when it became harder to titer."
Don't they all?
There, Brianna.
Very fitting.
Encapsulating some of the scientific struggle right there.
Yeah. The last phage here is Sanguine. Found in 2012 by Christian Kraft and Larissa Harding at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. Would you like to explain that one to me?
Before I do, does anyone have a guess why Sanguine is named Sanguine?
A bloody experience, perhaps?
All right, so that's one sense of Sanguine, certainly.
Extra cheerful.
Extra cheerful, sort of laid back, yeah. So let me disabuse you of that explanation for why Sanguine got its name. And I quote, Sanguine is the Daedric Prince of Debauchery. He also has domain over the darker natures of man, such as lust, sin, sloth, gluttony, and greed. He is the patron deity of sinners and is often seen with a bottle of wine or beer in his hand. Although a joker, Sanguine prefers to drag mortals down to sinful lifestyles by means of temptation and humiliation. This phage will carry on his legacy. All hail the Daedra.
Which mythology were we in again?
That is actually from a video game.
A video game.
Oh, of course.
Oh.
Video game.
There we go.
It's a video game mythology.
Video game mythology.
So anyway, that is the first of our What's in a Name segment. And, you know, depending on the kind of looks I get from Graham over the next minute, we may or may not continue.
I'm looking forward to continuing What's in a Name for episode 2.
Excellent.
I thought it would be helpful just to learn a little bit more about the backgrounds of all of us here. And so why don't we start with Debbie? Debbie, tell us a little bit about your background and what brings you to Sea Phages.
So I think I came to your lab, Graham, as someone who had some experience working with high school students. And I came to the lab as a high school teacher looking for authentic research experience for high school students. And my background is as a med tech. And all the things I could think of in microbiology were biohazard. And I didn't think that would be a very good thing to do to maintain, you know, a job, because eventually a pathogen was going to be a problem. So I came to Graham really looking for a non-pathogen that I could work with in the classroom. I brought two students with me, Jake Falbo and Joe Gross. And you told us in about an hour's time that we could initiate a national opportunity for finding novel bacteriophages at the high school and college level.
And it took me an hour to say that because I can never do anything briefly, right?
Well, you had a lot of background. We had a lot of catching up to do, so no. And so I started here just about 10 years ago and have coordinated various aspects of working with undergraduates, high school students, the graduate students, like just getting everybody to participate in ways that are meaningful. And here I am working in this group with Sea Phages, and it's such a blast. It's a very cool thing to do.
Okay. Dan, do you want to just...
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about what brings you to Sea Phages.
Yeah, well, my name's Dan Russell, and I got a few things in my background that are sort of perfect for this program and what I do with it. One is that my first job after college was actually sequencing genomes of prokaryotes at the Institute for Genomic Research, TIGER, which is now part of the J. Craig Venter Institute. So I had some DNA sequencing background. I also took a couple of CS classes, computer science, in college. And so that sort of fits in with what I do in terms of developing and maintaining the web presence for the program. And I've also taught high school science for 3 years. And, you know, I think anyone who's been in a sort of a K-12 classroom really appreciates when you can work on a project that really resonates with students. And that's one of the best parts about working with the Sea Phages program for me, is that, you know, the students really buy in because it's authentic research that they're doing. So that's how I ended up here.
Cool. Well, going around the table, Charlie.
My name is Charlie Bowman, and I have been working in the Hatfield Lab since I was in high school. I was a member of the program that Debbie mentioned earlier.
Are you in high school now still?
I am not in high school anymore. I am now a graduate student / technician, technically, but I started in the lab in high school isolating phages, and I came to the University of Pittsburgh, and I continued my I work in the Hatful Lab. Throughout my undergraduate, I have a background in microbiology with a heavy influence of computer science. And I currently am pursuing a graduate degree in information science to further that. My role in the C is largely technical, computer-oriented. Like Dan said, he upkeeps the web end, and I'm largely responsible for framerization and other things of that nature.
Putting out fires.
Editing podcasts. Any other technical expertise that I can lend. But it's been a great journey to get here through the program over the years.
In the master's program, that's focused on artificial intelligence. is that right?
No, I'm actually, I don't have a focus, but I've dealt largely in big data and machine learning and dealing with large data sets and analysis.
That should be pretty useful for the C phages program.
It has come in very handy so far.
Great. Well, Ken, I know you're a Cape Codder, right? And so perfect background for sounds of the sea. Tell us about how I came to do this. To the Sea Phages program.
Well, I have to admit, when
by
you
boat.
By boat when you down the Allegheny. No, so when you said we weren't allowed to talk about marine phages or sea phages, wasn't marine phages. I've actually spent quite a lot of time working on marine phages in the actual ocean because I am from Cape Cod, so I hope we get to talk about some marine phages in the future. I was trying to think about this the other day. I've been being part of scientific data collection since I was really little. You know, my mother actually worked for the USGS and did rainwater sample surveys for the Cape Cod National Seashore, and I must have been, you know, 5 or 6 when she was doing this, and I'd go along with her, and she ended up working for the Cape Cod National Seashore, and so I did a lot of volunteering in high school, getting to do science in a real lab, and I feel really fortunate that I got to do that, because I don't think there's a lot of opportunity for that on Cape Cod, especially out on the lower Cape where I'm from. There's not, you know, a big university down there that you can walk into and be part of something like the fire program and do science in a real lab. So I got to be in the National Seashore Labs, and that was pretty cool, even though a lot of them were in really ancient World War II trailers, but that, you know, it was still a real lab. And so I thought I wanted to do genetics, or, you know, I really like figuring out genetic problems. But when I got to school, I found out that the people who studied genetics were down in the basement with the yeast and the flies, and there was no windows, and that really was not very appealing. So then I got involved in oceanography, and I met Penny Chisholm, who's an oceanographer at MIT, and I ended up getting to work for her as an undergrad and learning about oceanography and studying cyanobacteria, Cyanococcus and Prochlorococcus, and that was very cool. So I went to get my PhD in biological oceanography, and that's how I met Jonathan King, too, and who got me hooked on phage and cyanophage. And phage are wonderful because you can take a sample of phage out of the refrigerator that is 10 years old, and they are still in there.
Well, some of them.
Some of them. You can keep going. You don't have to worry about storing them or feeding them over the weekend, even though my dad still asks me what they eat on a regular basis. You know, who's feeding the phage over the weekend? But that, you know, it's been
fish and chips.
It's been 15 years now, so maybe maybe he'll learn in the next 10. I'm not sure. And while I was in graduate school, I was fortunate enough to actually see you speak, Graham. You came and talked about fire at MIT, and I thought, what a great project, you know, that there were undergrads who got to do this and work on all these bacteriophage, because I was already hooked on bacteriophage, so to get to do that is an educational project and work with students just seemed like a really fantastic thing. So then I ended up in Pittsburgh about 10 years ago, and Debbie let me start hanging out with the phage hunters right away, which was wonderful. And then when Sea Phages got started, it seemed like a really great opportunity to be a part of that and help people work, you know, through their own protocols at the bench and work out their lessons and quality control annotations. And, you know, sometimes I feel like it's not so much what do I do with Sea Phages, but it's what do I not do at this point. And I think that sort of applies to all of us around the table.
Given your background and interest, do you imagine that perhaps some coastally located sea phages schools could move into the isolation and genomics of marine phages?
Absolutely. It's pretty easy. I mean, we're even isolating new cyanophages right now in Pittsburgh with artificial seawater. You know, every time we just were up at ASM in Boston and we grabbed some seawater off the dock up there. Every time I go home and visit my dad, even though, you know, December Massachusetts ocean is not very fun sampling, I take one for the team and go grab another water sample. I got yelled at by the harbor master last time. He thought I was stealing oysters.
So you could perhaps, you could think of in the future at some point assuming the title of Admiral of the Sea Phages or something like that.
Marine Admiral? Is that a title?
Marine Admiral? That sounds tautological.
Well, you know, there's always Star Trek, right? Aren't they still admirals?
Touché.
There you go. Phages.
How did they never know that you saw Graham talk? I never knew that.
Well, I mean, I was interested in phage, and Graham has been talking about this project for the past,
it's true,
however many years, right? So it would almost be more like, how could I not have seen Graham talk when I was in graduate school, right?
Yes, that's true.
We were at a lot of the same meetings and things. But he had no idea who I was until I was here in Pittsburgh for the first 4 years or so.
That would have been the same talk that attracted the teachers from Boston area.
Probably.
That are involved in this. So that was a very fruitful talk. I bet you have lots of recollection about that, Dr. Hadfull.
I have a little recollection.
There you go.
But I have a little recollection of lots of things, but not a lot of recollection about anything.
Well, are you going to tell us how you got here?
Well, I came to the University of Pittsburgh in 1988. After doing graduate work in the University of Edinburgh, and then I did a 3 postdoc sandwich, about a year and a half at Yale as a postdoc with Nigel Grindley, and then I did about 15 months at the MRC labs in Cambridge in the UK, and then back to Nigel's lab at Yale for about 4 years prior to coming to Pittsburgh, and I've been here ever since. And, you know, we started working on the sequencing of the L5 genome. Actually started that in Nigel's lab during the summer of 1988 before coming here. It was a substantial undertaking at the time. It still makes me shudder to think of what has happened between then and now. That took about a year to get most of the L5 genome sequence completed, I think another year to get the last base confirmed, and now Dan and Charlie seem to be able to turn around a genome of an average of a few hours or something ridiculous. But that was how we got launched, and the interest in doing that initially was to learn about some specific aspects of the phage, particularly for the way it integrates into the DNA, so that we could explore that process biochemically and use it as a tool to make vectors, things that we still do. But in collaboration with Roger Hendricks, who's just next door from us here, we became interested in comparing phage genomes and thinking about how they could have evolved and what their diversity was likely to be. And that's what extended our interest into a broader view of phage genomics. And then when we started the FIRE program, which is around 2002, that was motivated in part by a need to have access to phages and phage isolates that we could characterize and genomically sequence. And so that led to the development of programs to do that. And then a conversion of what was essentially a local program that we sort of quite liked into a more disseminated global or at least national level program, which is the Sea Phages. And that's what brings us here today. Welcome.
Why, thanks, Graham.
And just in terms of thinking about hosts, as we were musing then about the possibility of using different hosts to isolate marine phages. We've clearly had a primary focus at the C phages program to date on the mycobacteriophages, and it's been a particular delight of ours, I think, to see how the collection of sequenced mycobacteriophage genomes has just beautifully blossomed over the past few years. And
675 as of today.
675, which you have probably extracted from your live stats.
I have.
On phagesdb.org.
I have.
And so do you want to just tell us a little bit more about those, Dan? It's a pretty sizable collection now, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the phagesdb.org it's our site for collecting all of this wonderful data generated by participants in the C phages program. Of course, it only collects mycobacteriophages as of right now, and we have some splinter phagesdb sites to collect some other data. But even if we just look at mycobacteriophages, there are over 4,700 that are in the collection. And of course, those aren't just, you know, mixed in some metagenomic sample. Those are separate isolates in a freezer somewhere, which we're counting on Debbie that she knows where they are in a freezer somewhere.
Yes.
Good. And each of the past 2 years, we've seen over 1,000 new mycobacteriophages added to the collection. And of course, we've, as I just mentioned, 675 complete, finished, high-quality genome sequences, which I think is probably by far the largest collection of sequences of phages that infect a single host. But of course, it won't always be that way as we start to diversify and go into some of those new hosts. So I'm excited to see 675 finished Arthrobacter phages and Streptomyces phages and Rhodococcus phages as well.
Do you think we'll ever hit the mark of 1,000 mycobacteriophages completely sequenced?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Deb, you've been working on some of the other alternative hosts, I think, right? And I think Dan maybe mentioned the Arthrobacter phages that I know that some C schools isolated last year, and from my rather brief look at them, that looks like a stunning new collection of phages, even though it's small, not yet at 675, but growing.
Well, we had 13 Arthrobacter phages in our piloting here at the University of Pittsburgh, and then rolled the program out, and in the high teens, 16, 17 schools, you know, attempted to find phages. I think a subset of that actually found phages, but they took our number from 13 up to 82 phages. So we're not at the thousands of the mycobacteriophages, but it's a start. And from those 82 phages found, 69 were from the sea, and seven of them have added seven sequences to it. And it's already obvious that they've expanded the diversity if you take a quick look at it. And it's pretty exciting.
So are there some more new hosts for next year and beyond waiting in the wings?
There are some more new hosts. We have enjoyed looking at phages to Gordonia, which is closely related. It's in the order Actinomycetales. And I think the next focus, though, will be Rhodococcus phages.
Cool.
Because they seem to yield, have a better yield. That for those of you who are listening that tried the Arthrobacter and didn't like that you didn't get the same yield as you did with Mycobacterium, you'll like Rhodococcus better. And what I think is intriguing is that though we haven't quantified this in any way, when we go to the Rhodococcus phages, we see more and more mycobacterial hits. So we're going to see more opportunities and have some data to see what they share, what's in common, what's not in common. And I think that excites us all because, wait, how can there be a mycobacteriophage gene in a rhodococcus phage?
How do we grow Rhodococcus, Debbie? Is it just grow on LB or do we need to?
It does grow on LB. We can actually grow almost everything with using a basic LB. What we'd like to do this summer as we roll it out for this coming fall is see if there's something just a little bit better. Most of the media, is it a minimal media that's going to make a better phage landscape, or is it a really rich and robust spa-like environment for bacteria that allows better plaques to be seen? So we're going to hope to have some data that sort of quantifies that. And I'm hoping at the symposium to hear how the C. phage schools that actually did the Arthrobacter have said, we have a better way to do this. So I think that part's exciting, that what we do here isn't this one way. We're always like just having all these tried and true, for lack of a better way to describe them, recipes that are no fail. We're actually asking for students and faculty to participate and give us better ways to do stuff. And that's really exciting to me.
This is as the groups of phages expand, both for the mycobacteriophages and the others, it's going to certainly, it's going to create some challenges, I think, and some interesting challenges for how we do the comparisons. And Steve Creason's not able to join us today because he's off sunning himself on the beach somewhere. But I know that Charlie has been involved in helping to create and to construct some of these other Famerator databases. So do you think we're going to be able to handle it all, Charlie?
Well, the downside of an expanding database is that it takes a lot more work, a lot more computer time to keep up. But right now we're preparing, Steve and I are looking into ways to keep our computing power on par. As of right now, we curate a few databases. We have the mycobacteriophage database, which holds all of the mycobacteriophage sequences. And then we've got the smaller databases now that hold the alternative hosts. I think our real goal is to combine all of those into a massive database that is the most beneficial for looking at relationships and other things. But as of right now, we have to, it's a very computationally intense problem. Famerator calculations on the mycobacteriophage database right now can take up to a week and require us to dial in some supercomputing centers to keep things going. So I think it's something we can do and that we're looking into, and we have the power. We just have to start chugging away at it.
Cool. Well, we're looking at the upcoming C. phages annual symposium. I guess less than a month away. What are the dates again for that?
June 14th, I think it starts. June 14th, 15th, and 16th.
So we're looking forward to seeing everybody there. It's going to be, I think, probably the largest symposium that we've had to date. And so it was very exciting to see all of the abstracts coming in, and we're looking forward to, I think, a really wonderful set of posters and to all of the talks from both the students and the faculty.
Absolutely. Yeah, the dates are 13, 14, 15 of June, by the way, instead of 14, 15, 16. The 13th is Friday.
Oh, I'm off a day.
Just in case anyone was scheduling their flights based on this podcast.
Based on this podcast, you know, and the 13th is even my son's birthday, so I should really be
there. You go.
I should be paying attention.
Happy
two to Will.
Yeah, absolutely. We're very excited. And the symposium this year is the meat of the three-meeting sandwich, right? So we'll have the faculty retreat beforehand, which we're looking forward to the first instance of that. And then the second instance of the advanced bioinformatics workshop afterwards.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm excused for getting the dates wrong, right? Because that's the middle. Yeah, there's a big that's run the of middle days. Meeting that...
And I guess a particularly good reason for not getting your dates mixed up is that you don't want to miss on Friday evening the keynote talk from Marty Chalfie, who's in the biology department at Columbia University. Marty does not work on phages per se, at least not yet. but he works on touch sensitivity and the mechanisms of the signal transduction using the worm model systems. Mart has also made good use of GFP as a marker, and he won shared the Nobel Prize in 2008 in chemistry for those discoveries. And so we are particularly excited at having Marty give a talk and an opportunity for everybody to chat with him afterwards on the Friday evening. We hope to use some of the future episodes of Sounds of the Sea to talk about some of the interesting papers and findings that are emerging in the literature, and we look forward to having many of our members from the Sea Phages program as guests on this podcast. I think that Welkin, you've been looking at some interesting papers that just came out, and did you have something that you would like to recommend for reading for this week? And we don't have time to discuss it today, but we could think about adding that to the possible list of papers to chat about in future episodes. So what have you got?
Well, why, yes, Graham, I do have a paper to recommend.
Excellent. I'm glad to see that you came prepared.
That I came prepared, yes. I mean, phage are, of course, incredibly important. And so, as behooves phage, there's even a new PNAS paper about lambda and watching the integration of a lambda phage into a cell in real time, which is pretty neat to see how the at P and at B sites interact. And so that, I think that's pretty interesting and well worth a read. And so I look forward to discussing that in the
sounded pretty cool, right? It's like how do you find that little segment of DNA on the big bacterial chromosome, right?
Right, exactly, right? And it has to happen fairly quickly after infection, right? Yeah. And it's a little 15 base pair long target sequence on the chromosome. And so what happens after DNA injection from the phage that allows it to these little base pair sequences to line up and for integration to actually happen?
Awesome.
Great. So this podcast and other episodes of Sounds of the Sea will be available on phagesdb.org, and Welkin, you'll make sure that the link to the paper is also available on phagesdb.org.
You mean
as
I'll tell Dan to put the link up on phagesdb.org? Consider it, Dan, put the link up on the website.
Okay, will do. Welkin. Glad you told me.
Thank you, Dan.
And before we sign off, that we have a few birthdays today that we have to mention. Yeah, absolutely. It was 1 year ago today that the genome sequences of Simplify and Don Sanchon were released.
Yes.
So happy first birthday to Simplify from Western Kentucky and Don Sanchon from Washington University. And it was 3 years ago today that the genomes of Morgushi and Bongo were released. So happy birthday to them too.
Cool.
3 years old.
That's Washington University in St. Louis, right?
Yep.
See, I still know some of them off the top of my head.
There you go.
Bongo, a member of the Cluster M paper.
Yeah, absolutely. The most recent cluster paper, right?
We would love to have your comments on Sounds of the Sea or questions that you'd like us to address. And we have an email address where you can send us your messages. That address is info@seaphages.org. And you can, if you can't understand my funny voice, that will also be available. You can get that email address at phagesdb.org. So we welcome comments and questions on all and anything, and we'll try to address some of your questions during future episodes of Sounds of This.
Are we welcoming criticisms as well?
Definitely no criticisms whatsoever.
Okay, absolutely.
But corrections, absolutely.
Okay. Sounds fair.
We welcome all comments, corrections, questions. And if you write us something nasty, we will simply ignore it. Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed episode one of Sounds of the Sea. And as I said, you can find this podcast on phagesdb.org. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye,
everybody. It might be a